afternoon. It's 12:07. I'm Sean Beter, and this is Midday Matters Arts-Centric on WBOY, your home for NPR news and, of course, diverse music. With me, the true star of the program, as always, Miss Julia Meek. How are you today, Julia?
I am sparkling, I guess. If I'm going to be a star, I would say. And, you know, I am most happy to report that summer has arrived officially. We made it. And art-centrically speaking, we are ready to ride on a two-way tour down memory lane, in fact, beginning with a look at 21 great years of the Covington Art Fair and highlighting this year's art and musical offerings with the event producer Larry Wardlaw of the Asher Agency and one of this year's musicians and a very musical person indeed, Kevin Pekarsky. And then a look to the future of regional passenger rail in the next segment with Rebecca Sansom and NEPRA's advocate Jeff Paddock discussing Rebecca's new film, in fact, Transforming America, and its exclusive screening at the University of St. Francis. And you are so invited to join in the conversation, too, everybody that's listening out there. So be ready to give us a call at 800-471-9264 or post them right on our Midday Matters Facebook page. But first, as Sean and I just love to do, especially because it's summer, we each have a quick pick art tip for you to consider this first art-centric summer weekend that you just might need and will come in handy. What's your pick, Sean?
Well, since I'll be getting to bed early, because that's what I do on weekday nights because I get up so early.
Yes.
I'm more of a Saturday guy, and Saturday, Yellow Dead Betties are going to rock the Neon Armadillo here in Fort Wayne. Starts Saturday, 9 p.m. until about 2 a.m., and the lineup opens with Gunslinger at 9 p.m. It's some country all-stars. Zach Lockwood at 10 p.m., modern country there. And at 11 p.m., of course, Yellow Dead Betties rock the Neon Armadillo. You get a little classic, little modern, a little pop rock as well. So if that's your speed, it sounds like it's going to be a pretty fantastic time.
No wonder that Armadillo is neon with everything happening there. And that's fantastic. And, you know, if you can't wait until tomorrow night for a music fix, everybody has a more normal schedule than you might, I'm suggesting tonight's locals-only show at the Brass Rail, where you can enjoy Elephants in Mud, Big Money and the Spare Change, and Indiana Jones and the Rio PA Dress. And that's quite a lineup. And you are staying up late tonight, I know, because you and I will be enjoying NIPR's own Pick by the Pros wine pairing dinner.
That's right.
Don't forget that. And so for folks like us, this is a perfect after-dinner treat because the music usually doesn't begin all that early and it goes into the wee hours of the morning there at the Brass Rail. So it's the locals-only show tonight at the Brass Rail, which is 1121 Broadway.
That's right. And Julia, we were talking about this. We're really excited about this before the program got going. Right before we got on the air here, we got on our Facebook page. We have a surprise ticket giveaway that we've posted on our Facebook page. We have to stress that you can't call in and win these tickets. It's Facebook only.
Okay.
So if you go to the Facebook or Midday Matters Facebook page, you should see our ticket giveaway post. And Cherish the Ladies are coming to Fort Wayne, July 12th, I believe it is. We have 13 pairs of tickets to give away for that show. How do you get those? Well, you go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/middaymatters. You find that post. You comment on that post that you want a pair of tickets.
Okay.
And we'll put your name on some. You can pick them up here at the station between now and the start of the show. And you'll have a fantastic time on July 12th with Cherish the Ladies. But the only way to get those tickets, like I said, is to go to our Facebook page, comment on that post. The first 13 people to comment on that post will get their names on a pair of tickets. So get over there right now.
That's just perfect. And what a good way to celebrate summer. And I must say that the fantastic Celtic music and good cheer and whole spirit that the Cherish the Ladies share with us is an annual summer treat that everybody looks forward to. I know I'm going to be very proud to once again be introducing those lovely Irish ladies and Celtic lasses. And so, yes, no trick questions, no purchases necessary. Just go to our Facebook page, Midday Matters, and find that post, right?
Yeah, and find the post. Be sure to comment on it, and we'll get your name on a pair of tickets.
That's pretty easy and fun. And speaking of fun, it is a most art-centric celebration we're toasting in this first segment, and that is 21 years of Covington Art Fair tradition. We have we are so happy to welcome the event producer, Asher Agency's Arts Ambassador, I like to call him Larry Wardlaw, and one of the True Blue musical performers, Kevin Pekarsky. Thank you for joining us, guys.
Thank you, Julie.
And what a great weekend for some arts fair.
It's a terrific weekend, and it's sort of predictable. It's like when it's 90 degrees and really hot, we know it's the Covington Art Fair. It's just very predictable. Almost every year, I think, Kevin, from the 21 that you and I have been part of this, always a very nice, warm weekend, but fun weekend.
There must be a reason you don't have it very near the winter solstice. So
there's definitely a reason.
So I got that one. Before we launch into this year's admittedly multifaceted and absolutely delightful offerings, why don't you tell us a bit about the when and the why of the annual Covington Art Fair being born?
Sure. As you point out, it was 21 years. Hard for us to imagine it's been that long. And we started, quite frankly, as a Covington Plaza was a client of the agency, and we were really looking for an opportunity to increase awareness of all of the wonderful boutique shops that are located in Covington Plaza. And the idea of an art fair was born. And we started rather small. I would say the first year we had about maybe 30 artists or so. And Kevin, I think we had at least a small set of musicians at that time.
Yes.
But so music always has been a part.
Music has been a part from the very beginning, thanks to our great local art musicians and wonderful talent here in Fort Wayne. So it started really as something to bring awareness to the plaza. And now that it's been in its 21st year, it's automatically, the Covington Plaza is synonymous with the Covington Art Fair. And our businesses and merchants out there really enjoy and experience that too. I want to give them a lot of kudos, Julia, because they have their stores open and they bring their merchandise out in the stores, the dress shops and the restaurants. And so it just gives a whole really true, with art and with music and with retail, it's a wonderful fair.
It really does sound like such a spirit, such an art-centric and a really good spirit, which Fort Wayne is known for.
Absolutely.
And so this 21 years ago, like you say, it was a modest yet very, very solid beginning. And Kevin, I'm going to ask you, because you may have a secret graphic artist talent that I don't know about, but one thing I do know is that you're quite the musician here in town. And how did you get, I could say roped or suckered, but I would say honored to be invited into this whole project 21 years ago?
I'll go with honored.
Good. I was so hoping that you'd choose
it's
that.
A fantastic thing to participate in. I look forward to it every year. It's one of our musical highlights. I think that when we first got started, as it goes, it's referrals. Somebody knows somebody. My name got passed to Larry through maybe a couple of different people, and I don't remember who those people would have been at the time. It could have also had something to do with the fact that I've been in the Fort Wayne Philharmonic since 1983 as well. So, because the first couple of years, we actually did mix jazz with classical chamber music. And then
and in the more recent years, it's kind of evolved into just a wonderful jazzitudinal.
Exactly.
Ambiance for the whole festival. So that's another aspect besides all of the visual arts and, of course, the shopping fun fair and art centricity that's going along at the Covington Plaza itself. Now back to the art that folks can see. Tell us about the scope and kind of artists that come as vendors at such
sure.
a fair.
Well, Julia, they're really from, we have all mediums. I mean, watercolor, acrylic, pottery, jewelry, wood. So we have all mediums represented in art. And then our artists come from not only regionally, but they come from around the country. We've got artists from Georgia and Florida, Michigan, Wisconsin. And we're always thrilled to have that variety of artists. And I think I was saying earlier to you or to Kevin, you know, they are sort of the gypsies. They travel around the country, and all they spend their summer doing fairs and cities all throughout throughout all of USA. And it's just great to bring that variety of art along with a wonderful support of, I will tell you that about 40 to 50% of the show are local artists. And we feel we value that very much because, you know, we want to salute our local artisans. But it's a nice opportunity for the community to see art from another region. And it's all original, one-of-a-kind art. And we're pretty strict. It is a juried show. And that happens in the early spring in February. We have applications. A portion of the show is already exempt. We have artists who have been in the show for a number of years, and they're exempt. But we send out a request for artists, and they apply. And then Charles Shepard from the museum, whom you know very well, juries the show, along with another assistant from the museum. And you know, they know what they're doing. I'm not an artist, and that's why it's important that we bring somebody in to do that. And to add to that, Julia, we also we actually judge the show the day of. Charles will be out there tomorrow, and he will actually judge the entire show, and we give monetary awards to five artists for awards of excellence, and we give a best of show. And the museum, starting about 4 years ago, has done a museum purchase award. Uh-huh. And this is a real thrill for the artist because that piece is purchased and becomes part of the art museum's collection.
That is a fantastic way to, well, for one thing, keep the spirit of the art fair going all year long.
Absolutely.
But, and it also makes a fun little, well, it's a competition within a whole art fair event, which is something more for the artist. No wonder you attract such a great variety and amount. And from your humble beginnings, when you had 30 artists participating like that first year, as you said, which is no small amount, what kind of numbers do you see in your artist participants by now?
Well, right now, this particular show, we're at 90 artists. So we have 90 artists this year, and that's a few more than we had last year, and we're really excited about it.
We do need to take a quick break here. And of course, we want you, our listeners, to get involved in the conversation. If you have any questions or comments, call us. It's 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet @middaymatters. And don't forget, for this hour, if you want a pair of tickets to Cherish the Ladies coming up July 12th, we're doing a Facebook-only giveaway. You'll see if you go to facebook.com/middaymatters, you'll see a post about the ticket giveaway. All you have to do is comment, say, I want a pair of tickets to Cherish the Ladies, and the first 13 folks to do that will get a pair of tickets they can pick up at the station. Stay with us. Back in 2 minutes, it's Midday Matters.
The next Fresh Air, neurologist Oliver Sacks talks about hallucinations and how they can be triggered by grief, trauma, brain injury, medications, and neurological disorders. And he'll tell us about his personal experimentation with hallucinogenic drugs in the 60s. His book, Hallucinations, is coming out in paperback. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Kids are natural scientists, so how do we keep them that way? I'm Ira Flatto. Pulitzer Prize-winning biologist E.O. Wilson joins me with sage advice on how to create a career in science. Plus, why not tell math problems instead of bedtime stories? And a new subatomic particle. It's all on Science Friday from NPR. Every Friday afternoon at 2 on Northeast Indiana Public Radio, WBOI.
Think of octopus, and you may think aquarium.
It's kind of crunchy and chewy at the same time, if that makes any sense.
But in Greece, you can find it on your plate, a grill specialty.
It's just light and refreshing at the same time, and it'll go down really well with this wine.
Next stop on our global grill journey, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4, here on WBOI.
Music. Support for this program on WBOI is provided by United Way of Allen County, announcing this year's Spirit of Giving Award recipient, B.F. Goodrich, USW Local 715. That's what it means to live united. UnitedWayAllenCounty.org.
It's Midday Matters on 89.1 WBOY. I'm Sean Beter. This is the art-centric edition of our program, of course. That means Julia Meek is doing a great job over in that seat. I wanted to remind our listeners, of course, if you want to get in touch with us, you can always call us at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall, send us a tweet at Midday Matters. And Julia, don't forget, for this hour only, we have the 13 pairs of Cherish the Ladies tickets. They're coming to Fort Wayne July 12th. If you want a pair of tickets, go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/Midday Matters, and comment on our post to get a pair of tickets. Only the first 13 people to do that will get the tickets. Take it away.
They are going at a good clip, and I would say, of course, you should be one of those happy and lucky ticket winners, just if you haven't been already. So we encourage you to do that. In the meantime, we are enjoying a tour of all things old and new, especially accent on the new, happening at this year's Covington Art Fair right here at Covington Plaza on Saturday, June 22nd and Sunday, June 23rd. We can't say that enough, so folks will remember and mark their calendars very well. In studio with us, we have the event's producer, Asher Agency's Larry Wardlaw, and one of this year's and one of every year's musical performers and musical ambassadors, I might say, Kevin Pekarsky. And I have a question for you, Kevin, as we've been talking about the happy growth of the art participants in this festival. Let's talk about the music. How has that evolved since the earliest days, as you said, when it was originally? Maybe some jazz and some classical thrown and mixed together. What can folks expect this year?
Well, as the thing has grown, the classical music just ended up, not that there was anything wrong with that, but getting phased out in favor of the jazz.
Well, jazz is a perfect summertime kind of music to share at an art fair.
A little bit more energy, a little bit more upbeat.
Might we also remind our listeners that you are a man of many talents, and so you play a lot of classical music, but with our Philharmonic. But you love jazz as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty nuts about jazz. I'm actually the third generation of jazz musician in my family, so I grew up hearing this from the earliest time I can remember. I think 4 or 5 years old. I have my father's Oscar Peterson Trio recordings from vinyl, actually, from the early 60s and late 50s and stuff like that.
Kind of solid gold.
So, yeah.
And what can folks expect this year? And is there virtually music all the time?
We run three bands playing two-hour time slots each on Saturday, and one band playing a two-hour time slot right in the middle from 12:30 until 2:30. So just to kind of run it down, the first group, which starts at 10 a.m. on Saturday, is actually my jazz quintet, but we're featuring a gentleman named Scott Allen. Scott plays the vibes. Scott is a monstrous talent. It's a very unique instrument. If you know who Milt Jackson is, that gives you a correlation to what the instrument's all about. Scott is a Cincinnati Conservatory grad, and we don't get to play with him enough. He's a very special person. And rounding out that band, Dave Latchall will be on piano. I'll be playing bass. Steve Smelter will be playing drums. Rick Brown will be playing reeds. And then, of course, Scott on the vibes. 30-minute turnaround to reset. The next band will be the Dave Streeter Jazz Trio. Dave hasn't played for 2 or 3 years, and we're thrilled to have him back. Fantastic jazz reed player. Eric Clancy will be joining him, and Bradley Coons will be playing bass. The third group is Dave Latchaw's jazz trio, and this is the traditional piano, bass, and drums. trio. John Kaplanis is a fantastic drummer. He will be playing, and I'll be joining Dave as well. This group, we really admire the music of Keith Jarrett and the way Jarrett took his groups and put a very unique, fresh, adventuresome twist on playing traditional jazz standards. So it's
sounds good. And if that wasn't enough, now that's just Saturday, and still you're coming in on Sunday with another fantastic group.
Sunday's group plays from 12:30 until 2:30, and this is the Jim Steele Jazz Trio featuring Alan Parr. Alan Parr plays the trumpet and flugelhorn. Alan is recently retired from the Air Force Band. He did 20 or 25 years. He lived in Germany for 10 years. He played extensively all over the place over there. Great player. Fantastic sound on the flugelhorn. So Jim Steele's on piano with Alan, and Michael Patterson, a dear friend of mine, will be playing bass in that group.
Well, just when you thought it couldn't get any better to have such an art fair, a visual art fair, and to know that there's such music being offered too, that's really a coup, I would say, for the fair goer.
Oh, right.
And
right.
Larry, want to give us a real quick rundown on maybe some of the regional
sure.
local artists?
Sure, regional artists, Lisa Vetter and Paul Sievert, who are the Art Farm folks, and they're spectacular, and they're always unique and fun. And they bring their own wonderful group of friends out, and it's a party for them all weekend. Vicki Junkwright, who is a wonderful local artist, is in our show this year. Stephen Sheik, and Sheik is a jeweler who's really very talented. And Don DeSanto with the Hand Jive folks, and they've got clothing. So it's just across the boards. And Mike Mettler's a great photographer, and he's in the show again this year. So we've got some great local and, as you pointed out, regional and national folks coming. So it's a wonderful blend of talent.
You can certainly be proud of, and as well noted and certainly justifiable, this festival is really regarded as a premier, as our premier arts festival. How do you go about living up to that reputation again and again and again?
It's always you know, it's a challenge, but you know, the art fair world has something called the Blue Book, and we're always published in that every year, and there are reviews. The artists give us reviews after it's done, and remarkably, and we're grateful, we've always gotten very high marks from our artists for the hospitality they receive and for the community and for the volume of business that we get, because we have, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 people at a minimum who come through the show for 2 days. So we get some high marks, and that kind of keeps us able to invite and to attract the kinds of artists that make a fine art show truly a fine art show.
And you are gaining more and more regular visitors to the fair from all over the United States.
Absolutely,
as well.
Absolutely.
Who could ask for more? And well, we could ask for more time, but I know that we're quickly running out of that. We will be saying goodbye for this segment with just a little bit of a feeder of music that you'll be able to enjoy tomorrow. But Larry, first give us a real quick rundown on the what, where, when, and why.
Sure.
What, where, and why.
Covington Plaza tomorrow from 10 to 5, and on Sunday from 11 to 4. Everything is open, and there will be wonderful food vendors there as well, along with our artists and along with our music. It's going to be a great time.
Thank you, Larry, and thank you, Kevin, and best of art fairs to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we are hearing a little bit of that that music as we go out here. I do want to remind our listeners, I should say, that on Facebook right now, if you go to facebook.com/MiddayMatters, we're giving away a total of 13 pairs of tickets to Cherish the Ladies on July 12th. You can only get those free tickets by going to our Facebook page and posting within that post where we make that announcement. So still a few pairs left. If you want to go to that show, get in there right now. We'll continue this program in just a few minutes. Stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
next Fresh Air, neurologist Oliver Sacks talks about hallucinations and how they can be triggered by grief, trauma, brain injury, medications, and neurological disorders. And he'll tell us about his personal experimentation with hallucinogenic drugs in the 60s. His book, Hallucinations, is coming out in paperback. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Good afternoon. I'm Katie Anderson with WBOY News. The head of the company that administers Indiana's online I-STEP exams will face questions from state lawmakers today. As State Impact Indiana's Kyle Stokes reports, computer problems on the company's servers halted testing across the state 2 months ago.
Expect to hear some of the first public comments from CTB McGraw-Hill President Ellen Haley since problems with the company's servers kicked at least 78,000 Indiana students out of their tests 2 months ago. Local district officials have identified another 67,000 disruptions on top of that. It's all prompted State Superintendent Glenda Ritz to hire an outside expert to review the results, and it's raised serious questions about whether this year's I-STEP scores should count toward state mandates. Ratings for schools and teachers. Indianapolis Public Schools spokesperson John Althart says no matter the result of the hearings, doubts about this year's I-STEP will remain.
There will always be a question mark attached to this testing period, and I don't think that that's fair considering all the effort and time that was put in it by our parents, by our students, and by our teachers.
Lawmakers have also invited a representative for the state's Department of Education and other company officials to testify before opening the floor for public comment. Indiana House Education Committee Chair Bob Boehning has said lawmakers want to find out exactly what caused the problems and to determine whom they should hold responsible. CTB's current contract to provide the online I-STEP exams is worth more than $95 million. For State Impact Indiana, I'm Kyle Stokes.
Purdue University President Mitch Daniels plans to travel to China to try to expand the school's economic and educational partnerships. The former Indiana governor says he will look for ways to advance existing partnerships and seek to forge new ones during the six-day trip beginning Saturday. Daniels will meet with officials at Nanshan Group, China's second-largest aluminum company. Nanshan announced 2 years ago it would give Purdue $10 million over 5 years to support international programs, research, and faculty training. Daniels was invited by Nanshan to discuss an aviation project and several other initiatives. And the fines for illegally parking in a handicapped space will double next month. A bill mandating the change goes into effect July 1st, but as Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports, the bill's author says he's looking at ways to curb the practice other than just raising fines.
Valparaiso Republican Senator Ed Charbonneau's bill originally raised the minimum fine for parking in a handicapped zone without a permit from $50 to $200, but he lowered that amount to $100 after concerns he couldn't advance his bill out of committee. Those concerns were due to pushback from lawmakers like Wadesville Republican Senator Jim Toms, who says he still has issues with the severity of the punishment. Toms says he's thinking about people like his elderly mother, who, while not handicapped, might inadvertently park in one of those spaces.
A $50 fine would be substantial for them, as it would be, I think, for a lot of people. But a $100 fine for somebody who's struggling just to make it, I just felt that we should be a little bit more considerate of what we're doing here.
Charbonneau says the real problem is not the amount of the fine, it's enforcement. He notes only about 200 citations were issued in the entire state last year, and he acknowledges he doesn't have a solution for that. Charbonneau says what he's working on now is looking at how the state distributes handicap plates and tags in the first place.
The sticker may be on the car legally because of somebody else, but here we have someone that just absolutely doesn't need to be parking in a handicapped spot utilizing that placard improperly.
Tom says he agrees with Charbonneau and would support efforts to address the problem by reforming the system from that direction. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
This afternoon, you can expect sunshine with a high of 88. Overnight, we'll have some cloudy skies and a low of 67. And for your weekend, more sunny skies on Saturday with a high of 89 and a low of 68 on Saturday evening. And Sunday will be sunny and hot with a high near 91 and a low of 72 overnight. You're listening to Midday Matters on 89.1 WBOI, your home for NPR news and diverse music. We'll be right back.
It's 12:37. This is Midday Matters on 89.1 WBOY, your home for NPR News and, of course, diverse music. I'm Sean Beter. Very glad you're with us on this Friday, the first day of summer, June 21st. Hope your summer's off to a great start. Julia Meek is with me, of course. And Julia, we had a great discussion in the first half. We're going to switch gears a little bit in the second half of the show.
Well, just a little. And you might say that this is a whistle stop on this summer excursion that we're making now, Sean, because we're ready to learn about Fort Wayne's own regional rail progress and the exclusive screening of Transforming America, Rebecca Sansom's documentary film on the subject. And we are welcoming Rebecca now. She's joining us on the phone today. And here hello, and thank you so much for joining us. Here in the studio, it's the NPRA advocate, Councilman Jeff Paddock. So welcome to you both.
Thank you, Julia. Nice to be here.
And
yes, thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. It's this first day of summer. We're making a wonderful, well, a stop, like we said. And okay, passenger rail service, a bygone era's golden memory or a solid hope for the future. What do you say, Rebecca?
Oh, I think there's definitely a hope for the future of passenger rail. And I was surprised to find how many people in America like trains. I had no idea what I would find when I started doing this film. But
Tell us a little bit about where the idea for the film came from in the first place. I mean, I think this is one of those topics that a lot of folks may not necessarily think about. It's not necessarily top of mind until you need it or you know mm-hmm. you want to use it.
Exactly, and it wasn't on top of my mind at all. I'd had no interest in trains actually before I started researching and thinking about them the way I did. But like most American children, I didn't grow up riding trains. The first time I rode a train was in Europe, and that was when I was 22. And I didn't even really think about how it's so normal over there until the last time I went to Europe. And I was just having coffee with a friend, Katie Chen, who's actually in the film as well, and we collaborated on this. But we started talking about how easy it is to travel in Europe without a car. And the vice versa, you can't really do that in America. If a tourist comes over here, you almost have to have a car. And is that a drawback? I don't know. I started thinking about this and researching. And this isn't a newfangled idea. I mean, we definitely had rail service in this country, and it was what built this country. It's great for the economy. And then we turned into a car culture, and that's not a bad thing. But maybe it's time to start thinking about trains again. And what I found while doing this film was that people really like trains. So that was exciting.
The lore and the lure of them, as well as the practical everyday use of them, I assume that you're speaking of, Rebecca. And is that what you found from your the folks that you did interview to make this documentary?
Yes. And so what I did was, since I'm not an expert on passenger rail, I'm just a filmmaker. All I can do is ask people what they think about trains, tell me stories about passenger rail experience they've had here and abroad. And so that's what I did. And all of the stories were really positive. And then to contextualize that, I talked to experts, like leading environmental scientists here at Stanford University, where I live, Ann Ehrlich, and also Professor Richard Winner at NYU Polytechnic, who did a lot of surveys and studies about passenger rail versus car commuting, commuters that travel by rail, and if that affects stress and different things like that. So those are the things that are brought up in the film.
And I want to remind our listeners, of course, if you have a question or comment for our panelists this hour, you can call us at 800-471-9264. You can always email us middaymatters@nipr.fm. Send us a tweet at middaymatters. Of course, hop on our Facebook page as well. Jeff Paddock, I want to bring you into the conversation as well here. And some folks who may not know, your role in advocacy in the community for this, tell us a little bit about why we invited you today.
Well, thank you, Sean. It's a pleasure to be here, and I couldn't agree more with what Rebecca said. I'm looking forward to meeting her next week, and I'm looking forward to seeing this film, which I understand is just an outstanding advocacy for the return to passenger rail all over this country. And, of course, as you may know, you and Julia know, I've been working on this for some time, about 15 years since the late 1990s. And we finally were able to put the wherewithal together, some funding together and support with local governments and state governments to get a feasibility study, which is a few months behind, but finally getting completed now. We're dotting our I's and crossing the T's this week, and we're going to be announcing this next Friday, June 28th, in anticipation of seeing this great film and getting some more folks excited about passenger rail and updated on what NIPRA, Northeast Indiana Passenger Rail Association, has been doing for the past several years. We've been working quietly behind the scenes. Mayor Henry's been with us. The county commissioners have been with us. We've made progress with Governor Pence and others, and we are moving forward with the announcement of the details of a feasibility study.
And now, in fact, you have the expertise and artistic capability and talent of somebody like Rebecca, who has made a fantastic film, and that will be an exclusive showing here at the University of St. Francis, all to help this worthy cause. How did that whole gathering, happy gathering, come together?
Well, I have to thank board member Rich Davis, who's done a lot for us. We are a board of directors. We are a non-paid group. We have no staff, and we do rely on our volunteer board and some other folks that are helping us. And Rich Davis is one of our more active board members, along with our president, Fred Lanahan. And Rich was able to put this together. So not only is this a great program for folks to see, and I think Rebecca's absolutely right, there is so much enthusiasm, particularly by young people who never had an opportunity to ride trains. And it's a chance to really reconnect with rail travel and how important it is, not only for transportation, but for my aspect and how I'll be presenting this, economic development, job creation, tourism, and just so many other things. This is also, I must say, a fundraiser for our organization, NIPRA. We're asking a $10 donation for adults and $5 for children, but I think it'll be well worth the opportunity to get more information on what we're doing and an opportunity to help our organization push this feasibility study. We hope to eventually have passenger rail service back in Fort Wayne.
I'd like to remind our listeners that NIPRA is Northeast Indiana Passenger Rail Association, close cousin, I guess, to our own NIPR and Northeast Indiana Public Radio. That's just a little radio or rail joke. But in the meantime, I do have a question for you, Rebecca. When you did decide to and go forward with making this movie, what obstacles or surprises did you encounter along the way?
Okay, that's a good question. Actually, I was surprised that our Kickstarter campaign was successful. I really didn't know.
Congratulations for that.
I didn't know if people would want to contribute to a documentary about trains and transportation, but I was really shocked that not only did friends and family contribute, of course, but I had a lot of strangers that gave over $100 to our campaign, which I thought was amazing, and that's how we got funded. So it was just remarkable to see. We have over 100 backers, and a lot of them were strangers that just found us and really, really wanted to get involved, and they sent me messages, and I had no idea what a big deal this was going to be. And so it's exciting that it's starting to screen now.
We have to go to a break in just a few moments here, but before we do, Rebecca, I want to ask you about something that Jeff touched on a bit there. Did you see in researching this film and doing the interviews that you did you see a generational divide, I guess, in terms of one generation, you know, preferring, say, a more, I guess you'd call it, independent car culture, let's say, versus young people, you know, tending to favor rail a little bit more? Or was it a good mix of people? Was there a significant generational divide?
It wasn't significant. Of course, one of the reasons I made the film was because my parents have never been to Europe and they've never ridden trains. So that was interesting to me. And then a lot of the young people I talked to, they are really into not using fossil fuels, so that was interesting, and they're moving more into urban areas. So I guess, yeah, it was kind of mixed, but definitely there was something there.
It has more to do, you think, with the movement towards towards cities then?
Yes.
We do need to take a quick break here. We'll continue this discussion in just a few minutes. In the meantime, we hope you'll get in touch with us. So do call us with your questions or comments at 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall, send us a tweet, and don't forget, on our Facebook page only, we are giving away 13 sets of tickets total for Cherish the Ladies on July 12th. Do stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
America is no longer the world's innovation leader, and now it's runner-up in supercomputers, too. I'm Ira Flatow. Join me on Science Friday for a look at why China is now number one. Plus, are the vegetables on your supermarket shelf still alive? Yes, and they've got rhythm. That's on Science Friday from NPR. Every Friday afternoon at 2 on Northeast Indiana Public Radio, WBOI.
Think of octopus, and you may think aquarium.
It's kind of crunchy and chewy at the same time, if that makes any sense.
But in Greece, you can find it on your plate, a grill specialty.
It's just light and refreshing at the same time, and it'll go down really well with this wine.
Next stop on our global grill journey, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4, here on WBOI.
Hey, did you hear Car Talk last week?
It's curious
the brakes are like that. I never thought of it until this very moment. I never thought of much until...
No.
I don't usually think of anything until I hear myself say it. And then I say, you know, that's bull.
For more well-reasoned car advice, join us this week for Car Talk.
Saturday and Sunday at 10 on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Minutes before the top of the hour, 1 o'clock, it's Midday Matters on 89.1 WBOY, your home for NPR news and diverse music. I'm Sean Beter. With me, of course, Julia Meek. And Julia mentioned this is a whistle stop, I suppose, in our Midday Matters journey. What are we talking about today, Julia?
Well, we're talking all of the wonderful past and certainly the hopeful future for regional passenger rail service in this area, all over the United States. As a matter of fact, we're so happy to have the director of Transforming America, and that's a wonderful documentary film on the subject. Rebecca Sansom is with us by telephone. And here in the studio, we have Jeff Paddock, councilman and certainly a rail advocate for many years. And Jeff, as you and I are the two people in this room that do remember local passenger rail service and look for its future, how would we expect a new or 21st century local passenger service to be different?
Well, I think, first of all, we are moving away from, as Rebecca said, automobiles, clogged highways, even clogged airports. Automobile traffic, our road system is very important, and our airports are very important. But we need a third mode of transportation. Our country is growing. Fossil fuels are becoming more scarce and more expensive. And again, it's an economic development. What we want to look at is how much more efficiently we can move folks with rail than perhaps we did a couple of decades ago. And what we're hoping for is speeds of up to 110 miles per hour eventually with service to Chicago and to Columbus, Ohio, if this plan would go forward. Sleeker trains, faster trains, fewer stops along the way, maybe more express stops, express trains, and therefore an opportunity for folks to spend less time actually traveling, maybe more time working on the train. So we think this is a 21st century train, the 21st century interstate highway plan, if you will, more rail service that is catching on across the country. And we want to be a part of this. As more Midwestern cities are connecting, particularly to Chicago, we think the next logical extension is Chicago to Fort Wayne, and we hope east to Columbus, Ohio.
I want to put a question here, actually, to both of you. Rebecca, maybe we'll start with you. In making this film, Jeff alluded to, well, this would be kind of a 21st century, next generation highway project almost.
Right.
There is significant infrastructure that goes into creating new rail systems, putting these up-to-date systems online. Rebecca, and the folks that you talked to and the research that you did, is there an appetite to, well, spend that kind of money to do that kind of work?
There is, and it's incredible. Almost everyone I asked if they would support investing in passenger rail said yes, enthusiastically. Like, yes, definitely. And then the more I researched, I realized if we keep investing in the current infrastructure, we're just going to maintain the status quo, which is very congested, like Jeff said, in the airways and the highways. So people are excited about this, and polls consistently show that they would support investing in passenger rail.
And if I might add, Sean, the investment in passenger rail that we're talking about here in the Midwest is much less expensive than building new highways. We need interstate highways. But the I-69 extension to Indianapolis is about $20 million a mile. The US-24 widening to Toledo, between $12 and $15 million a mile. Depends on how many overpasses, how much land has to be acquired, a number of engineering things. We think rail, $3 to $4 million, $3 to $5 million, much less expensive. And an infrastructure improvement, much like the interstate highway system, that can help, as Rebecca says, transform America as far as not only transportation, but economic development, the jobs that can be created, the tourism that can be created. We hope stops that will bring people into Fort Wayne. We can get them on a CityLink bus and take them to the Fort Wayne International Airport. A coordination of mass transportation services that other cities are doing can happen right here. But yes, it does take an investment. We think 80% from the federal government, 20% from the states, just like the interstate highway plan from the 1950s. And I think slowly this is catching on. We hope as the economy improves, states can invest in this as well.
We have about 5 minutes left in the program here. Of course, if you'd like to get in touch just under the wire here with your question or comment, it's 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. Julia.
And we will be asking Jeff to give a whole rundown on the event and the wonderful screening of Rebecca's film, Transforming America, before spending our time doing that as well. Rebecca, I would ask you, what's your biggest takeaway on this, the effectiveness of promoting passenger rail revival with a film like you just made?
Well, that's a good question, and I think since this is the beginning of the screening journey, it's been exciting. There was a screening in Lake Erie, and everybody afterwards was asking, when are we going to get high-speed rail here in Lake Erie? And so people are really starting to talk about it, and it's important now because Congress is trying to pass bills to defund Amtrak, and if more people let their representatives know that they do not want that to happen, this is a really good time for this film to come out. I didn't realize how timely it was going to be when it was finished, but it's really timely, and I hope people get excited about it.
I do too, and I will also remind our listeners that we have a bit of a clip from your film on our Facebook page, as well as connections to the various websites and the including NIPRA's and Facebook pages, so that everybody can partake in learning more and learning more about your film, Rebecca, and we can't thank you enough for being inspired to make such a film and then doing the hard work that it takes to do it. So thank you so much for joining us today and talking about it. And now I am going to ask you, Jeff, just tell us how Rebecca's film is going to be presented and where.
Yes, this will be at the Roland Performing Arts Center at the University of St. Francis. I'm sorry, this is at the Performing Arts Center downtown. My apologies. Not necessarily at the campus, but what we used to call the Scottish Rite Auditorium there. So my apologies. Now that it is in possession of the University of St. Francis. So this will be at 6:30, so there should be plenty of free parking down there in that area. We do open the doors at 5:45. We do have a number of folks there. I believe Mayor Tom Henry will be there. We're going to be, before we show this film, announcing a few more of the details of the feasibility study as it's being put together here. But we think the numbers are very promising for economic development, not only in Indiana, but Ohio. And this is what's important. This is a three-state effort, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, and there's also Michigan and other states involved with the region.
And obviously this is radio, but you have a map behind you. You've brought for the taped version of this show. The line that's the proposed line here runs from Chicago all the way through Fort Wayne to Columbus, Ohio.
Right. You are seeing that for the first time, and my friend Rich Davis is responsible for that. But I think it'll show well next Friday. And it does show a number of little dots on there, and those are proposed stops. We think it is important that some of these cities, particularly Warsaw in our area, Lima, Ohio, over to the east, is included on that. Now, whether or not all these will go will be determined. But some of these are stops that will be proposed on a couple of trains, and then we'll be looking at maybe more express service with maybe just Fort Wayne as the only stop between Columbus and Chicago. What we are hoping for is that we can lay all this information out, get more interest in the state of Indiana, the state of Ohio, in investing in this, as has Illinois, Wisconsin, Michigan, and other states. And then, as I think someone said, perhaps it was you, Julia, that we've got to make sure that the federal government in Congress invests in rail development. Rebecca mentioned this. The more we get people involved in reaching out to their members of Congress and indicating that they support this, I think the more this will have a chance to be funded in the future.
And, of course, I would like to thank Rebecca for joining us by phone. Hopefully next time it'll be by rail.
That's right. Rebecca.
Thank you so much, Julia.
And Rebecca, very briefly, how can folks connect with you and connect with your film if they'd like to learn more?
Oh, great. Yes, you can go to transformingamerica.com, and you can find email addresses to connect with me there, or Facebook. We're on Facebook and Twitter at TransformingUS. So,
all right.
Please get in touch with me.
Well, we are out of time, unfortunately, for this edition of Midday Matters, but big thanks to Rebecca Sansom and, of course, Councilman Jeff Paddock for being with us on this edition of our program. For Julia Meek, I'm Sean Beter, and this is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios at 89.1 FM HD Channel 1 and online at nipr.fm. This is WBOI Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester, service of Manchester University. Fresh Air with your host, Terry Gross, is on its way in just a few moments. It's 1 o'clock. Have a great weekend.